Death by Dahlia, by Charlaine Harris. New York Times bestseller Charlaine Harris is the author of the immensely popular Sookie Stackhouse series about the adventures of a telepathic waitress in a small southern town. A series that includes Dead Until Dark, Living Dead in Dallas, Club Dead, Dead to the World, and seven others. The Sookie novels have now been adapted into a popular HBO television series called True Blood as well. To satisfy the curiosity of her fans, Harris has edited a guide to the Sookie series, The Sookie Stackhouse Companion. Harris is also the author of the four-volume Harper Connelly Paranormal series, Grave Sight, Grave Surprise, and two others, as well as two straight mystery series, the eight-volume Aurora Tea Garden series, consisting of Real Murders, A Fool and His Honey, Last Seen Alive, and five others, recently collected in the Aurora Tea Garden Mysteries Omnibus 1 and the Aurora Tea Garden Mysteries Omnibus 2, and the five-volume Lily Bard series, consisting of Shakespeare's Landlord, Shakespeare's Champion, and three others, recently collected in the Lily Bard Mysteries Omnibus, as well as the standalone novels Sweet and Deadly and A Secret Rage. She's also edited the anthologies Crimes by Moonlight and, with Tony L.P. Kellner, Many Bloody Returns, Wolfsbane and Mistletoe, Death's Excellent Vacation, and Home Improvement, Undead Edition. Her most recent novel is a new Sookie Stackhouse novel, Dead Reckoning. Here she takes us, in company with the powerful vampire Dahlia Lindley Chivers, to a lavish party for various creatures of the night, where the festivities get a bit rougher and more deadly than even Dahlia might have anticipated. Dahlia Lindley Chivers had been a woman of average height in her day. Her day had been over for centuries, and in modern America she was considered a very short woman indeed. Since Dahlia was a vampire and was reputed to be a vicious fighter even among her own kind, she was usually treated with respect despite her lack of inches and her dainty build.
"You got a face like a rose,"
said her prospective blood donor, a handsome, husky human in his 20s.
"Here, little lady, let me squat down so you can reach me. You want me to get you a stool to stand on?"
He laughed, definitely in hardy-har-har mode. If he hadn't preceded his amusing comment on Dahlia's height with a compliment, she would have broken his ribs and drained him dry. But Dahlia was fond of compliments. He did have to bear some consequence for the condescension, though. Dahlia gave the young man a look of such ferocity that he blanched almost as white as Dahlia herself. Then she stepped pointedly to her left to approach the next unoccupied donor, a blonde suburbanite not too much taller than Dahlia. The woman opened her arms to embrace the vampire, as if this were an assignation rather than a feeding. Dahlia would have sighed if she'd been a breather. However, Dahlia was hungry, and she'd already been picky enough. This woman's neck was at the right height, and she was absolutely willing, since she'd registered with the donor agency. Dahlia bit. The woman jerked as Dahlia's fangs went in, so Dahlia considerately licked a little on the wound to anesthetize the area. She sucked hard, and the woman jerked in an entirely different way. Dahlia was a polite feeder, for the most part. The blonde's arms squeezed Dahlia with surprising force, and she gripped a handful of Dahlia's thick, wavy, dark hair, which fell in a cascade reaching almost to Dahlia's waist. The blonde pulled Dahlia's hair a little, but she wasn't trying to pull Dahlia off. Not at all. At Dahlia's age, she didn't need to drink much at a sitting, or perhaps at a biting would be a more appropriate phrase. After a few pleasurable gulps, the vampire had had enough. Dahlia didn't want to be greedy, and she'd taken such a small amount that it would be safe for the woman to donate again on the spot. Dahlia gave a final lick, and when the air hit the licked puncture marks, her natural coagulant set to work almost instantly. The blonde woman seemed disappointed that the encounter was over, and actually tried to hold on to Dahlia. With a stiff smile, Dahlia removed herself with a little more decision. The donor turned to the next vampire in line, who was Cedric.
She would have to be stopped after that. Most people who enjoyed being bitten enough to be listed with the donor agency simply weren't smart about when to stop.
You could be a little nicer, Dahlia's best friend Taffy said reprovingly. Would it have hurt you to tell the breather how good she was?
Dahlia would have ignored anyone else who ventured to give her advice on her manners. But Taffy was within 200 years of being as old as Dahlia. They were the oldest vampires in the nest, and their friendship had survived many trials. Taffy had been practically Amazonian during her lifetime, and she remained an impressive woman even now. She was 5'7" and busty. Her light hair exploded in a tangled halo around her head and fell past her shoulders. Taffy's husband, Don, was one of the trials they'd survived, and it was because of Don's preference that Taffy went heavy on the makeup and tight on the clothes. Don thought that was a mighty fine look on Taffy. Of course, Don was a werewolf. His taste was dubious at best. Taffy waved at Don, who was over by the food table. Werewolves were always hungry, and they could drink alcohol until the cows came home, and then the wares would eat them. A party with an open bar and a buffet was like heaven to Don and his new enforcer, Bernie. The two wares were making the most of the opportunity, since politics demanded they be in the vampire nest for Joaquin's ascension celebration. Dahlia noticed Don and Bernie casting contemptuous glances at the group of blood donors. Werewolves thought humans who were willing to give blood to vampires were from the bottom of the barrel. Any self-respecting were would rather have his fur shaved off. Dahlia was sure Don didn't mind giving Taffy a sip in private. At least, she hoped that was the case. During Dahlia's own brief marriage to the previous enforcer, her husband had not been averse to a little nip. The demons and half-demons huddled together in a corner, and just after a very skinny female said something, they all burst into laughter. Dahlia looked for one half-demon computer geek she knew better than the others. With a frisson of pleasure, she spotted Melponius's reddish skin and chestnut curls in the cluster. Their eyes met. The half-demon and Dahlia exchanged personal smiles. They had had some memorable evenings together in Dahlia's bedroom on the lower level of the mansion. The glitter in Melponius's pale eyes told Dahlia that the demon wouldn't mind a replay. She might retrieve some pleasure from this dismal evening after all. A few creatures Dahlia didn't recognize were scattered through the crowd. No fairies, of course. Vampires loved fairies to death, literally. But there were other creatures of the Fae present, and a witch. Joaquin had a reputation as a liberal, and he'd made up the party list and presented it to Lucatia, who'd retained her post as the executive assistant to the sheriff, despite the change in regimes. Lucatia had sniffed at some of the inclusions, but she had obeyed without a verbal comment. All the vampires were walking softly and carefully until they learned their new leader's character. Since he'd lived on his own, not in the nest, until his appointment as sheriff, Joaquin was a largely unknown element. As Taffy took Dahlia's arm to steer her over to the buffet to join Don, Dahlia said,
"I'm not enjoying myself, though I ought to be."
"Why not?" Taffy asked. "The humans will be gone soon, and we can be ourselves. It's not like we haven't seen this coming. Cedric has been getting more and more set in his ways. He's lazy, he's sloppy, a waistcoat every day. So dated. He can't even pretend to belong to this century." Like all successful vampires, Dahlia knew that the key to surviving for centuries was adaptation. And the most conspicuous adaptation was following the trend in clothes and language. This had been essential when vampires existed in secret, so they could blend in with a crowd long enough to cut out their prey. Vampires were an increasingly familiar presence in business and politics, but they found that society still accepted them more easily if they mimicked modern Americans. It was true, too, that old habits died hard. It had been only 6 years since the undead had come out, and to vampires, that was less than the blink of an eye.
"I did see that Cedric would have to be replaced," Dahlia said. "I don't know Joaquin well, and maybe I'm worried about how he will rule, and how living in the nest will be, with him in residence.
At least he had a very conventional ascension.
It couldn't have been more standard, Taffy agreed. And soon the guests will be gone, and we can amuse ourselves. I'm pleased with Joaquin's first steps. The mansion is looking beautiful, more beautiful than it did for my wedding.
Taffy tapped the newly polished wooden floor with the toe of her boot. The reception room, which was large and full of dark leather furniture and scattered rugs, was at the back of the mansion and looked out onto the garden. Taffy had gotten married in that garden one memorable night. Though the night was chilly, the fountain was splashing away in the dimly lit courtyard outside the French doors. The lights didn't need to be bright. Vampires have excellent night vision.
Dahlia was proud that the mansion, which housed the vampire nest of Rhodes and was the area headquarters for all vampires, was polished and sparkling, clean and newly redecorated. However, Dahlia's pride had a certain nostalgic tinge. Though for decades they'd all tried to prod the old sheriff, Cedric, into installing new carpet and modernizing the bathrooms, she found that she missed the old fixtures. And she missed the former sheriff, too. Maybe he counted as an old fixture.
I'm going to talk to Cedric, she said.
Not the smartest move, Holmes, Taffy cautioned. Taffy always tried to use current slang, though sometimes she got it wrong or was off by 5 years. Or 10.
I know, Dahlia said.
The new sheriff, Joaquin, was certainly keeping an eye open to see who approached Cedric. But Dahlia was not afraid of Joaquin, though she did regard him with a certain respect for his devious ways. The ousting of Cedric had been handled with a sort of ruthless finesse. Cedric, sunk into what he thought would always be his cushy job, had been foolishly complacent and unaware.
I'll join you later, she told Taffy, though I may stop to have a word with Malponius, too.
Playing with fire, Taffy said, grinning broadly.
Yes, we did that last time.
Even half-demons could produce fireballs. The memory caused Dahlia to have her own tight smile on her lips as she approached the former sheriff.
Cedric, she said, inclining her head very slightly.
Even Dahlia didn't care to provoke Joaquin by appearing to offer Cedric obeisance.
Dahlia, he said, his voice laden with melancholy. See how the peacock preens.
Joaquin, in the center of a cluster of other vampires, was dressed to kill.
Obviously, Joaquin felt like the king of the world on his ascension night.
In his thin, dark hand, he held a goblet of royalty, a blend of the blood of various European royals who could keep their crumbling castles open with the money they made by tapping into their own veins. His favorite artiste, Jennifer Lopez, was playing in the background. He was wearing a very sharp, dark gray suit with a pale gray silk shirt, and in his crimson tie was an antique pearl stickpin. Fawning all over Joaquin was Glenda, a flapper-era vamp who had never been Dahlia's favorite nest sister.
You could use a little preening, Cedric, she observed.
Cedric was wearing fawn-colored pants and a white linen shirt with a flowered waistcoat, his favorite ensemble. He had many near duplicates of all three pieces hanging in his closet. Cedric ignored her comment.
Glenda looks good, he said.
In the past, Glenda had slipped into Cedric's bedroom from time to time, more to keep the sheriff sweet than from any great affection. Dahlia had often seen the two clipping roses in the mansion garden at night. They'd both been ardent rose growers in life, or at least, Glenda said she had been. Glenda, who was no more than 90, did actually look very tempting this evening, in a thin blue silk slip dress with absolutely no undergarments. She was smoothing Joaquin's shirt with the air of someone who knew what lay beneath the silk. Dahlia harbored a certain appreciation for Glenda's cleverness.
You know she's trash, Dahlia told Cedric.
But such delicious trash.
After tossing his head to get his long, pale hair out of his way, Cedric took a pull on his bottle of red stuff, a cheap brand of the synthetic blood vampires drank,
so they could pretend they didn't crave or require the real thing. This was sheer affectation. Dahlia had watched Cedric approach a donor. Red stuff was a far cry from royalty in a crystal goblet. Cedric's mustache drooped, and even the golden flowers and vines in the pattern on his waistcoat looked withered. Having served their purpose, the human donors were being ushered out of the large reception room by a smiling young vampire. They'd be taken to the kitchen and fed a snack, allowed to recover from their donation, and returned to their collection point. This had been found to be the most efficient method of dealing with the humans the agency sent. If they weren't shepherded every step of the way, these humans showed a distressing tendency to want to hide in the mansion so they could donate again and again. Some vampires weren't strong-willed enough to resist, and then dead donors and unwelcome attention from the police followed. The only donor left in the room was the young man who'd irritated Dahlia. He seemed to be in the process of irritating Don, Taffy's husband, Packmaster of Rhodes. That proved his stupidity. Dahlia turned back to Cedric.
"Will you stay in the nest?" Dahlia asked. She was genuinely curious. If she'd found herself in Cedric's position, she would have packed her bags the second the king chose Joaquin.
"I'll find an apartment elsewhere, sooner or later," Cedric said indifferently,
and Dahlia thought that this perfectly illustrated Cedric's drawbacks as a leader. Though he'd been a dynamic sheriff in his heyday, Cedric had gradually become slow, and that was the nicest way to put it. This indolence and complacency, creeping into Cedric's rulings and decisions over the decades, had been his downfall. It was no surprise to anyone but Cedric that he'd been challenged and ousted. To the newer vamps, the only surprise was that Cedric had ever been named to the position in the first place.
"The situation won't change," Dahlia said. Cedric would make himself a figure of fun if he gloomed around the mansion during Joaquin's reign. "I'm sure you've saved money during your time in office," she added, by way of encouragement. After all, the vampires who lived in the nest contributed to their sheriff's bank account, and so did the other vampires of Rhodes who chose to live on their own.
"Not as much as you would think,"
Cedric said, and Dahlia could not restrain a tiny gesture of irritation. Her sympathy with the ex-sheriff was exhausted. She excused herself.
"Malponius has asked to speak to me," she lied.
Cedric waved a dismissive hand with a ghost of his former graciousness. While Dahlia strode across the carpet to the cluster of demons, not the least hampered by her very high heels, she glanced back to see Cedric open the door to the hall leading to the kitchen. He stepped through at the same time as Taffy and Don.
Glenda called, "Taffy!"
and passed through after them. Then Dahlia stopped in front of Malponius, his fellow demons clearing the way for her with alacrity. Though Dahlia was a straightforward woman by nature, she was also incredibly conscious of her own dignity, and she didn't care for the leering element in the smiles the demons' buddies were giving her. Malponius himself surely knew that. After the barest moment of conversation, he swept Dahlia away to an empty area.
"I apologize for my friends,"
he said instantly. Dahlia forced her rigid little face to relax and look a bit more welcoming.
"They see a woman as lovely as you, they can't regulate their reactions."
"You can, apparently," Dahlia said, just to watch Malponius flounder. He knew her better than she'd thought, because after a moment's confused explanation, he laughed. For a few minutes, they had a wonderful time with verbal foreplay, and then they danced.
"Perhaps later,"
Malponius began. But he was interrupted by a scream. Screams were not such an unusual thing at the vampire nest, but since this one came in the middle of an important social occasion, it attracted universal attention. Every head whipped around to look east, to the wing occupied on the ground floor by the kitchen.
"Don't move,"
called Joaquin, to stem the surge of the crowd in the direction of the commotion. Somewhat to Dahlia's surprise, everyone obeyed him. She found that interesting.
Even more interesting was the fact that Joaquin searched the crowd until his eyes met hers.
Dahlia,
he said, in lightly accented English,
take Katamori with you and find out what's happened.
Katamori had been something of a policeman a couple of centuries ago. Dahlia had to work to keep her face expressionless.
Yes, Sheriff,
she said, and jerked her head at Matsuda Katamori, a vampire who had an apartment near Little Japan. Katamori, who appeared just as surprised as Dahlia at being singled out, immediately glided to her side. They moved quickly to the door to the passage leading to the mansion's kitchen. It wasn't a wide space, and the carpet had been installed to deaden sound, not to beautify. Both the vampires were alert as they moved silently down the passage to the kitchen. The swinging door had been propped open. When the mansion had been built in the early 1900s, the builder could not have imagined that the kitchen would be used by non-eaters. The white tile floors and the huge fixtures had been maintained, even updated, once or twice during the century that had passed. When Cedric had bought the mansion at a bargain price, glamour had been involved. He'd left the kitchen as though it would still be needed to prepare a banquet. Normally, the stainless steel fixtures shone in the overhead lights suspended from the high ceiling. Now, the stainless steel was splashed with red. The smell of blood was overwhelming. From where they stood, just inside the doorway, Dahlia and Katamori couldn't see the body because of the long wooden table running down the middle of the room. But a body was undoubtedly there. The only thing living in the kitchen was one of the half-demons, a skinny girl Dahlia hadn't met before. The girl was standing absolutely still, very close to the corpse, if Dahlia's nose was accurate, and her hands were up in the air. Smart. Dahlia enjoyed the smell of blood, but she preferred her blood to be fresh and its source living, as did every vampire but the rare pervert. Once the blood had been out of the living body for more than a couple of minutes, it lost much of its enticing smell, at least to Dahlia's nose. From the delicate twitch of Katamori's nostrils, he felt much the same. The girl's feet were hidden from view by the old wooden table, originally intended for staff meals and food preparation. But the blood smell was emanating from the area around her, and red had splashed the gleaming range and refrigerator on the south wall. She was standing squarely in front of the refrigerator. The half-demon girl opened her mouth to speak, but Dahlia held up her hand. The girl closed her mouth instantly. "Is any of this blood yours?" Dahlia asked. The girl shook her head. Dahlia and Katamori looked at each other. Dahlia didn't have to look up far to meet his eyes. He waited for her instructions. She was the senior vampire. She liked this silent acknowledgement a lot. Dahlia said, "I'll go right, you take left." She didn't know much about Katamori, but she did know that his reputation as a fighter was almost as formidable as her own. Without a word, the slightly built Japanese vampire began working his way around the north side of the table, his eyes and ears and nose working overtime. The north wall featured huge windows, now black. The effect was unpleasant, as if the night were watching the scene in the kitchen, but Dahlia was not about to be distressed by any nighttime creepiness. She herself was the thing that went bump in the night. She began circling the table to the south side. The stovetops and ovens, a stainless steel prep table with pots and pans on a shelf underneath, and an industrial refrigerator and a freezer filled the wall. A few steps revealed the crime scene. The half-demon girl was standing stock still on the edge of the pool of blood that had flowed from the victim. Dahlia took in the whole picture, then began noting the details. The corpse was that of the young man who had irritated her, the human donor she'd last observed having words with Don. The man's throat had been torn out. Dahlia had seen much worse in her long, long existence, but she was irritated at the waste of the blood. The half-demon girl had not a speck of blood on her,
except for her shoes, which were red Converse high tops, now somewhat darker around the rubber soles. Dahlia raised her delicate black eyebrows and looked across the room.
"Katamori," she said.
"Lots of people have been through,"
Katamori answered. From this laconic response, Dahlia understood that he'd found nothing tangible on his side of the room, but that there were complex scent trails.
That made sense. The north side of the kitchen was the natural route to take to get to the door on the far end of the long room.
This door led into a mudroom with hooks for wet weather gear and gardening clothes. On the other side of the mudroom, a heavier door opened out onto the broad apron marking the end of the service driveway. All the humans who'd come to the mansion to donate earlier in the evening had both entered and left the mansion through that door.
"Please stay where you are for the moment," Dahlia said to the half-demon, who bobbed her head in a series of sharp nods. Since the blood pool and the body took up the whole of the floor between the appliances and the table, Dahlia bent her knees and leaped over the table, landing lightly on her amazing heels on the other side. She met Katamori at the end of the table, and together they looked back at the body.
There was a series of bloody footprints leading away from the corpse, footprints too large to be those of the half-demon girl. These prints led to the first exit door, the door to the mudroom. Together, they examined it. There were no bloody fingerprints on the knob or the glass panes. Dahlia bent over to sniff the knob, then shrugged.
"A bloody hand touched it, but that tells us nothing," she said, and pushed the door open.
Katamori tensed, ready for anything. The mudroom was empty. The two vampires stepped into the small space. The floor was covered with a rubber mat, and there was a bench running along each side. Underneath were stored a few pairs of boots, some of which had been there for 40 years. A coat or two hung from the row of hooks mounted above the benches. At least one of the coats had been there for 2 decades, an elaborate black coat with a huge fur collar.
"I don't think anyone will return to get this one," Katamori said, and pushed it with his finger.
A cloud of dust rose up. Dahlia noticed that most of the hooks were similarly covered in dust. Only 2 of the hooks were shiny enough to indicate they'd been used recently. The knob of the solid door that led to the outside was pristine to the eye, and when Dahlia bent to smell, she got only a whiff of blood, a slightly weaker trace than that on the inner knob.
"Left this way," she told Katamori. "Let's finish the kitchen, then we'll report."
They turned back into the kitchen. Before they'd left, the humans had piled their plates and cups by the sink. Fainting humans were bad for business, so the agency had insisted the vampires take a tip from the blood bank in offering refreshments.
Nothing to be found there. The victim hadn't approached that area.
"What do we have so far?"
Katamori asked.
"There's a vampire smell in here.
Very recent," Dahlia said.
"Besides the half-demon, I'm getting humans, a werewolf, at least 2 vampires.
"Werewolves." Dahlia's mouth twitched.
But first of all, she had to interrogate the only living creature in the cavernous room.
"Demon girl," she said, "explain yourself."
Now that Dahlia spared a moment to take in the half-demon's ensemble, Dahlia's eyes widened. The skinny creature, whose short hair was dyed a brilliant lime green, was wearing black under armor from top to bottom. Her red sneakers were a fine clash with the lilac miniskirt and a buckskin vest lined with fleece.
"I'm Diantha,"
the girl said, and then she began a long sentence that was possibly in English.
"Stop,"
Katamori said,
"or I'll have to kill you."
Diantha stopped in mid-word, her mouth open. Dahlia could see how very sharp the half-demon's teeth were, and how many of them seemed to be crammed into her little mouth. Katamori would have quite a fight on his hands, and Dahlia found herself hoping it wouldn't come to that.
"Diantha, I'm Dahlia. Our names are similar, aren't they?"
Dahlia said. She hadn't tried to sound soothing in a century or two, and it sat awkwardly on her.
You must speak so that we can understand you. Maybe it will help you to be calm if we tell you we know you didn't do this thing.
We do?
Katamori knew the reason, but he wanted Dahlia to spell it out.
No blood on her, except on her shoes.
She didn't bother to lower her voice. Diantha's bright eyes were on her so intently that she knew the girl could read her lips.
I'm the runner for my uncle in Louisiana,
Diantha said. She didn't seem to need to breathe when she spoke, but at least this time she spoke slowly enough, at less than warp speed, that the vampires could understand her.
And you are here at the Ascension Party because...
Rhodes demons were invited. I was staying the night after bringing...
And the rest of her sentence ran together in a hopeless tangle.
Slower,
Dahlia said, making sure she sounded like she meant it. Diantha sighed noisily, looking as exasperated as the teenager she appeared to be.
Since I was here for the night, they invited me to come with them.
She put an almost visible space between each word.
Nothing else to do, so I came with.
You're visiting from Louisiana on a business errand, and you came to the mansion with the Rhodes demons because they were invited. Diantha nodded, her green spikes bobbing almost comically. If Dahlia hadn't seen demons fight before, she might have laughed.
How did you happen to enter the kitchen?
Katamori asked. During Dahlia and Diantha's conversation, he had circled the table to stand at Diantha's back. She had turned slightly, so she could keep both vampires in view, since she was now bracketed between them. Despite Dahlia's assurances, the half-demon girl didn't like her situation at all, her knees bent and her hands fisted, ready for a challenge. But when she spoke, her voice was steady enough.
I was going to the refrigerator,
Diantha said, still making the effort to speak slowly.
You guys were out of Sprite, and I thought it would be all right if I checked to see if there was more in the refrigerator. I smell the blood.
Dahlia held up an admonishing hand, and Diantha slowed down.
I yelled because I smelled the blood as I stepped in it.
Not before?
Most supernaturals had a very sharp sense of smell.
Smell of vampire had deadened my nose,
Diantha said.
That made sense to Dahlia. Though the scent of vampire was naturally delightful to her, she had been told many times that it was overwhelming to other supernaturals. Was the blood still running when you came in?
The thicker trickles from spurting arteries were barely moving down the shiny surface of the appliances, and the cast-off drops that had been slung away when the throat had come out were beginning to dry at the edges.
Little,
Diantha said.
Was anyone else here?
Katamori said.
Diantha shook her head.
The two vampires glanced at each other, eyebrows raised in query. Dahlia couldn't think of any more questions to ask. Evidently, Katamori couldn't either.
Diantha, in a second you can move.
Dahlia and Katamori closed in on each side of the body.
All right, Dahlia said. Step out of the blood. Take off your shoes and leave them.
The half-demon girl followed Dahlia's instructions to the letter. She perched on the wooden table to remove her red high tops. She placed her stained shoes neatly side by side on the floor.
Stay or go?
She asked, looking much more cheerful now that she wasn't so close to the corpse. Demons didn't often eat people, and proximity to the body hadn't been pleasant for her.
I think you can go, Dahlia said, after a moment's thought. Don't leave.
Go back to the party,
the girl said, and did so. By silent agreement, the two vampires bent to their task. With their excellent vision and sense of smell, they didn't need magnifying glasses or flashlights to help them analyze what they saw.
The human donors came into the kitchen and ate and drank,
Katamori began.
A vampire shepherded them.
As always, Dahlia said absently. And that's a vampire we need to talk to, because somehow this human got left behind, or he hid himself.
Obviously, the shepherd should have noticed.
A werewolf came through here, probably after the death. Perhaps more than one werewolf,
Katamori continued. He was crouched near the floor, and he looked up at Dahlia, his dark eyes intent. His black braid fell forward as he bent to examine the floor, and he tossed it back over his shoulder.
I don't disagree, Dahlia said, making an effort to sound neutral.
Any trouble that involved the werewolves would involve Taffy.
I think we should tell Joaquin that the shepherd needs to come here now, or as soon as he's returned.
Katamori said, yes, but in an absent way. Dahlia went to the swinging door. As she'd expected, one of Joaquin's friends, a wispy brunette named Rachel, was waiting in the hall. Dahlia explained what she needed, and Rachel raced off. Cedric had forbidden the use of cell phones in the mansion, and Joaquin had not rescinded that rule yet, though Dahlia had heard that he would. In 2 minutes, Gerhard, the shepherd of the evening, came striding down the hall to join Dahlia. She could tell by the way he walked that he was angry, though he was smiling.
That perpetual smile shone as hard as Gerhard's short, corn-blonde hair, which gleamed under the lights like polished silk. He'd lived in Rhodes for 50 years, but he and Dahlia had never become friends. Dahlia didn't have many friends. She was quite all right with that.
What would you like to know?
Gerhard asked. His German accent was pronounced, despite his long years in the United States.
Tell me about taking the humans out of here, Dahlia said. How did you come to leave this one behind?
Gerhard stiffened.
Are you saying I was derelict in my duties?
I'm trying to find out what happened, Dahlia said, not too patiently. Your execution of your duties is not my concern, but Joaquin's. The man is here. He isn't supposed to be. How did that come about?
Gerhard was obliged to reply.
I gathered the humans together to leave. We came to the kitchen. I followed procedure by showing them the food and drink provided. After 10 minutes, I told them it was time to go. I counted as we left, and the number was correct.
But here he is, Katamori said, straightening from his crouched position by the body.
So, either your count was incorrect, you are lying, or an extra human took his place. What is your explanation?
I have none,
Gerhard said, in a voice so stiff it might have been starched.
Go to Joaquin and tell him that, Dahlia said, without an ounce of sympathy.
Well, then,
Gerhard became even more defensive.
This man and I had come to an arrangement. I left him here because upon my return, we were to spend time together.
Though he had already donated this evening, Dahlia said.
His name was Arthur Althorpe. I have been with him before,
Gerhard said.
He could take a lot of donation. He loved it.
A fangbanger, Katamori said. Fangbangers, extreme vampire groupies, were notorious for ignoring limits. Gerhard gave a jerk of a nod. Neither Dahlia nor Katamori remarked on the fact that Gerhard had initially lied to them. They knew, as did Gerhard, that he would pay for that.
He was my weakness,
Gerhard said violently.
I am glad he is dead.
This sudden burst of passion startled Dahlia and disgusted Katamori, who let Gerhard read that in his face. Gerhard whirled around to leave the kitchen, but Dahlia said,
What time did you leave with the humans? Was anyone in here with the man Arthur when you took the others away?
Gerhard thought for a second.
I bade them get into the vans at 10 o'clock, since that was the time appointed by the agency that sent them. There was no one in here, but I could hear people coming down the hall as I waited for the other donors to exit. I'm sure one of them was Taffy.
Dahlia would have said something unpleasant if she'd been by herself. As it was, she was aware of Katamori's quick sideways glance. Everyone in the nest knew that Dahlia and Taffy were friends, despite Taffy's unfortunate marriage. Dahlia's own brief marriage to a werewolf had been forgiven, since it had lasted such a short time. But Taffy showed every sign of continuing her relationship with Don, and even of being happy in it, to the bafflement of the other vampires of Rhodes.
"We'll have to find Taffy and Don and ask them some questions," she said. "Gerhardt, would you request this of Joaquin?"
Gerhardt gave a jerky nod and barged out the door, shoving it with such force that it was left to swing to and fro in an annoying way. Dahlia turned her attention back to the spray of blood on the fixtures and the blood pooled on the floor still wet.
"In my experience," she said to Katamori, "it takes over an hour for blood to begin to dry. Given its tacky quality and the low temperature of this room, I believe the body has lain here for at least 30 minutes, give or take."
Katamori nodded. They were both experts on blood. They looked up at the clock on the kitchen wall. It read 10:45.
"If Gerhard did leave with the humans at 10 o'clock, say it took him 5 minutes to encourage them to put their dishes by the sink and to get them out the door, then this Arthur was left by himself at 10:05 or 10:10. I talked to Cedric, and then I danced with Melponius."
Dahlia was trying to figure out when the scream had brought the party to a halt.
"We heard Diantha at 10:30,
Katamori said. With some surprise, Dahlia saw that he was wearing a watch, an unusual accessory for a vampire.
"And we were in here within a minute and a half of that. We've been investigating for perhaps 20 minutes. So someone entered the kitchen between 10 minutes after 10 and 25 minutes after 10, by the narrowest reckoning."
"And this Arthur died of his throat being ripped out,"
Katamori said.
"Yes, though he may have been choked before that. Without the excised material, it's hard to say."
"It's over here."
Katamori pointed to a grisly little mound of skin and bone, half hidden under a chair. Dahlia squatted to peer at the discarded handful.
"This is so mangled, I still can't say whether he was choked. This tissue was tossed aside, not consumed."
Katamori made a mew of distaste.
Dahlia said, "I was thinking of the trace of werewolf, and all that that implies. Werewolves would eat human flesh, at least when they were in their wolf forms.
Do you think we've seen everything there is to see? Smelled everything there is to smell?"
Katamori asked, tactfully bypassing the werewolf issue.
"Let's go through the human's pockets," Dahlia suggested,
and Katamori squatted on the other side of the body. Dahlia had quick, light fingers, and she was thorough. Folded and stuck in a pocket on her side of the corpse, she found a sheet from the donor bureau containing a rendezvous point and a scheduled donation time for tonight. Just as Gerhardt had said, the donors were to be picked up at 8, then returned to the pickup point at 10. Dahlia wondered if Gerhardt had told Arthur to make sure he was included on the donor list. It couldn't have been a coincidence that Gerhardt's favorite banger had been included in the donor party. In the last 4 years, it had become a regular practice for the hosts of parties to which vampires had been invited to hire donors from a registered donor bureau, so they could be sure that all the human snacks on offer had been examined for blood-borne diseases and psychoses. There was a disease vampires could catch from humans, Cyno-AIDS, and donors had been checked for hidden agendas ever since a donor in Memphis brought a gun and opened fire on the assembled partygoers. Dahlia opened Arthur Althorpe's wallet to get his donation card, which was perforated with 7 holes. The card was punched every time the agency sent him out. After Dahlia had turned over the body to go through the other pants pocket, Katamori patted down Arthur's legs. To their surprise, he found a knife in an ankle sheath. Very careless. Gerhardt's inefficiency was now a mountain rather than a molehill. After a glance of silent agreement, the two stood, having gotten all the information from the body. They looked all around the vast kitchen for any clue they might have missed. The blackness continued to stare in through the big windows. The blood continued to cling wetly to the stainless steel surfaces. Arthur Althorpe, Fangbanger, continued to be dead. After Katamori deadbolted the outside door, he and Dahlia left the kitchen. Rachel had resumed her post in the hall, and Dahlia asked her to keep guard over the swinging door.
"Let no one into the kitchen until we're sure we don't need it anymore," she said.
"No one will be able to enter from the outside."
Rachel nodded, her expression intense. She was still proving herself as a vampire, and Dahlia felt sure Rachel would stand her ground against anyone who wanted to see the body.
Back in the reception room, Joaquin had resumed his seat in the throne-like chair reserved for the sheriff. His ascension party had taken a definite downturn in tone. The festive atmosphere had degenerated to uneasy apprehension. The partygoers were milling around anxiously. The demons and part-demons had established a tight knot in one corner, with Diantha in its center, and the Fae, an Oread, a rare Nyx, and an elf, clustered close to them. Bernie Feldman, Don's enforcer, was watching the French doors with unmistakable worry. Bernie was standing oddly, as if nursing a hurt in his stomach. Dahlia followed his eyes. Approaching, obviously disheveled, were Taffy and Don. Taffy had her shoes in her free hand, the other hand was holding Don's, and the two were looking at each other with what Dahlia could only describe as goo-goo eyes.
"Disgusting," she muttered,
and Katamori glanced at the happy pair.
"They went through the kitchen," he said. "We're going to have to question them."
"Better report to Joaquin first." The two vampires went to stand in front of their new leader. Dahlia bowed her head to a carefully calibrated angle. Katamori's head was perhaps a centimeter lower than hers. Joaquin accepted their gesture and waited for them to report. He looked better in the chair than Cedric had. Joaquin was slim and tall, with thin dark hair and large brown eyes. The new sheriff wasn't as old as Dahlia. Only two of the Rhodes vampires were older than her. But jobs didn't always go to the oldest. Glenda was draped over the back of the sheriff's seat, as if being Joaquin's new fuck buddy gave her some special status. Dahlia eyed the vampire with no expression. Her dislike of Glenda went from vague to specific.
"What have you discovered?"
Joaquin asked, giving the two investigators all his attention. Dahlia was pleased with the mark of respect.
"The human was named Arthur Althorpe. He was a pet of Gerhardt's."
Dahlia had already spotted the blonde vampire, who was trying to look stoic, but only managing gloomy.
Gerhardt allowed Arthur Althorpe to remain in the kitchen, while Gerhardt took the other donors back to their rendezvous point.
"I see that he has told you that." Gerhardt was flanked by Troy and Hazel, the vamps Joaquin had named as his punishers.
"Furthermore," Katamori said, "I found a knife strapped to the human's ankle."
Another nail in Gerhardt's coffin, perhaps literally.
"He died very quickly when his throat was torn out," Dahlia said. "We know he died in a 15-minute window, give or take a minute or two, between 10:10 and 10:25.
Katamori said, "Passing through the kitchen close to the time of death were the human donors, Gerhardt, another vampire or two I can't identify, and at least one werewolf." All eyes went to Don and Bernie, who had been whispering furiously into Don's ear. Don looked shocked and grim. Taffy was the only vampire standing anywhere close to them, and she took her husband's arm. He patted her hand to show her he appreciated the support. Bernie stood to Don's other side, and he had an expression Dahlia had seen before. It meant, "I'm ready to die, but I'd rather not."
"It won't make any difference to you, Joaquin, but I didn't do it," Don said in his deep voice. "I can't imagine why I'd have any reason to kill the poor bastard, though maybe motive doesn't interest you."
If Dahlia had had a moment to do so, she might have advised Don that this was not the time for sarcasm.
"Don and I did go through the kitchen," Taffy said, "but we were on our way out into the garden to have a talk."
"What was that talk about?" Glenda asked.
"You were right on our ass, so you probably know already. But I don't answer to you."
Taffy said, and the light of battle flashed into her eyes.
Any vampire who spends time with a werewolf has degraded herself and has no status in the nest, Glenda said, straightening and taking a step away from the sheriff's chair.
Dahlia was instantly on the alert. If she let Taffy take on Glenda, Dawn would get involved, and the whole situation would get unnecessarily complicated. When Glenda took another step in Taffy's direction, Dahlia was ready. She leaped and kicked as hard as she could, and Glenda went flying through the air with her beautiful clinging dress whipping around her, as Dahlia landed gracefully and spun around to make sure Glenda was down. The crack of Glenda's ribs was audible as she met the wall. She slid down to collapse on the carpet, bleeding and whimpering. Joaquin didn't move, but his eyes were blazing. From their positions flanking Gerhardt, Troy and Hazel snarled. There was a long, tense moment, with all eyes on Dahlia. "Excuse my preemptive punishment of Glenda, Joaquin," she said calmly. "I acted without your permission, but I was incensed at her presumption. She has no right to make such a pronouncement with you sitting in front of us. You alone have the right to determine who belongs in our community and who doesn't." Glenda showed unforgivable disrespect. Joaquin blinked.
"Interesting interpretation of Glenda's words," he said.
No one went to help the fallen vampire. Possibly they were all afraid that Dahlia would consider them an enemy if they did so.
"She was presumptuous," Joaquin said after a moment's consideration,
and the room relaxed. Dahlia could tell that more than one vampire would have enjoyed seeing her deal out even more damage to Glenda, but she'd made her point and interrupted Glenda's accusation. Joaquin continued,
"Do you know who the other vampires were who passed through the kitchen at the vital time?"
"One was Cedric," she said. "I know his scent too well to mistake it, and I witnessed Glenda following Taffy, Dawn, Bernie, and Cedric out of the room, but I'm not sure if she entered the kitchen or not." Joaquin's heavy eyebrows flew up in surprise. He looked at his predecessor.
"I walked through the kitchen," Cedric said.
He was leaning against the wall.
"I was right on the heels of Taffy and her werewolf, but Glenda went out before me, not after. I wanted to talk to her."
"Why?"
Joaquin said. He looked up at Cedric, whose blue-patterned waistcoat was rumpled above his belly. Even Cedric's boots were scuffed, while Joaquin's loafers shone like mirrors. The contrast could not have been more unkind. Cedric the old catfish, Joaquin the sleek barracuda. To the side of the room, Glenda moaned as she struggled to her knees to get to her feet. Very quietly, another vampire stepped over to let her drink from him. Dahlia noticed that he was looking as neutral as possible, as if his arm just happened to be in the right place in front of Glenda's mouth for her to have a healing draft. He even kept his eyes on the floor so Dahlia couldn't meet them. Dahlia smiled inside. It was good to be feared.
"Why?"
Cedric said.
"Because I wanted to go outside, and I hoped she would walk with me, for old time's sake. Because, in case you hadn't thought of it, this is a very awkward evening for me, and I needed friendship." The demons looked amused, the wares embarrassed,
and the vampires all looked elsewhere. An open admission of weakness was not the vampire way. Only Dahlia looked thoughtful. Joaquin said,
"Taffy, what happened out in the garden?"
Taffy bowed her head to her sheriff.
"Of course I'll answer, if my sheriff asks it," she said graciously, reinforcing Dahlia's point. "We talked to Bernie, my husband's enforcer, about his lack of courtesy to one of the demons."
She nodded her head toward Diantha.
"Bernie was uncouth enough to make fun of her speech patterns. Dawn felt the need to teach Bernie a lesson about diplomacy. As you can see, Dawn made his point." Now that danger had passed, Bernie had resumed his hunched-over position. He was clearly uncomfortable.
He bobbed his head in acknowledgement, straightened, and winced.
My leader did correct me, he said.
While we were in the garden, Taffy continued, we remembered it was the site of our wedding, and we celebrated in an appropriate way.
She smiled brilliantly at Joaquin, pleased that she'd phrased it so diplomatically. Taffy had never been subtle. Don grinned at her and slung his arm around her shoulders.
We had a great celebration back in the bushes, he said, even if it was colder than a witch's tit.
The only witch present opened her mouth to protest, but Dahlia whipped her head around to look at the woman in a significant way. The witch's mouth snapped shut.
But none of this offers any proof that the human didn't die at your hands,
Joaquin said in the most reasonable of voices.
We haven't got a speck of blood on us, Sheriff, Taffy said, holding out her arms to invite inspection. When Don gave Bernie his etiquette lesson, he didn't break the skin. My husband knows that the smell of blood is tough on vampire sensibilities.
Would the killer be blood-spattered?
Joaquin asked Dahlia.
You saw the wound.
I'll defer to Katamori, Dahlia said. It's well known that Taffy and I are friends. A vampire moving at top speed, a vampire who had performed this kill many times, might be able to avoid the blood, Katamori said. Anyone else would have had to change clothes.
He walked over to the couple and examined them with minute care.
I see and scent no blood on Taffy and Don.
Dahlia's shoulders might have relaxed a fraction.
Gerhardt said quickly,
I'll smell like blood because I took some from a donor this evening.
It was Dahlia's turn to work, and she looked Gerhardt over from stem to stern. She straightened to tell Joaquin, he does have a trace of blood scent, and one pinpoint of blood on his collar, but nothing out of the ordinary.
Cedric said,
you may examine me, Katamori.
Though no one had suggested this.
Katamori glanced at Joaquin, got no signal either way, and moved over to Cedric.
He'd give Cedric a thorough examination, Dahlia knew. Katamori had never been fond of Cedric.
I can't find any on Cedric's clothes, Katamori said, though he does smell slightly of blood.
Cedric shrugged.
I partook of the donors, he said.
There was a pounding on the mansion's front door. Dahlia looked at the clock on the wall, just as a precaution. It was now 11:15. Arthur Althorp had been dead around an hour. The front doorkeeper for the evening, a young vampire named Melvin, came into the reception room so quickly that he skidded on the parquet floor.
The police are here, Sheriff,
he said to Joaquin.
They say they've had a report of a body on the premises.
How long can you delay them?
Joaquin snapped.
10 minutes,
said Melvin.
We'll need it, Joaquin said. Go.
Melvin began walking slowly through the archway on his way back to the front door. He was looking at his watch.
Katamori and I will dispose of the body, Dahlia said,
and she and Katamori took off at top speed. As they passed Rachel, still on guard at the swinging door, Dahlia said,
Clean up crew, right now.
Rachel moved so fast you could hardly see her go, and Dahlia could hear her call a few names in the reception room. It wasn't the first time a body had had to be disposed of quickly in the mansion. While Katamori unlocked the mudroom door, Dahlia pulled an ancient tablecloth from the linen closet. Together, the two vampires wrapped the body in the yellowing linen to prevent drippage. Dahlia took the feet, and Katamori lifted the shoulders. They were carrying the body out while the cleaning crew swarmed through the swinging door. Conveniently, all the cleanup material was kept in the kitchen, and as Katamori and Dahlia took their burden through the mudroom and out the final door, she glimpsed the vampires on duty opening cabinets to pull out the bleach and turning the faucets in the sinks while others fetched the mops. The dead man had been tall and heavy. Since Katamori and Dahlia were not too far apart in height, they could bear the weight equally, and they were both immensely strong, so Arthur Althorp's weight wasn't an issue. His bulk was. They carried the body through the large garden to the formal fountain, with its deep, raised surround, designed to form a pool. The statue in the middle of the fountain, was a woman in flowing drapery. She was holding a tilted jug, out of which the running water splashed into the pool. At the side of the fountain farthest from the house, they laid down the body. Dahlia leaped up on the broad edge of the pool and craned over precariously to fish a key from the statue's drapery. It wasn't in the fold that usually held it, and she had a moment's severe jolt until she felt the metal edge in the next fold down. All the vamps in the house knew the key's location, and once or twice it had been misplaced. With a huge feeling of relief, Dahlia hopped down, a little wet from the experience. She squatted to insert the key in the keyhole of a large panel in the base of the fountain. This panel looked as though it had been designed to give access to the plumbing and the fountain mechanism, but the vampires had designed it for another use. Though this body was somewhat bigger than most of the previous bodies that had been hidden there, and though the hole was partially obstructed, they had to make it work. Dahlia actually crawled into the space to pull on the body, while Katamori remained outside to stuff the legs in. Then Dahlia had to crawl out over the body, getting even more rumpled and a bit stained in the process. By that time, she and Katamori could hear the police surging through the mansion. "I can't be found like this," Dahlia said, disgusted, looking down at her dress. "Then take it off," Katamori said, holding the maintenance panel open. "I have an idea." When the police came out to search the garden, they found Katamori and Dahlia frolicking in the fountain stark naked. The sight froze them in their tracks. Not only was it fall and chilly, but in the moonlit garden, Dahlia was white as marble.
"All over," said one of the cops, awestruck. "And he's just a shade darker."
"Did you need to talk to us?" Dahlia asked, as if she'd just noticed their presence. Katamori, at her back, wrapped his arms around her.
"I hope not," he said. "We have other things to do."
"Cold hasn't affected him much," muttered Cop Two.
He was trying to keep his eyes off the vampires, but he kept darting glances in their direction. Dahlia could feel Katamori's body shake with amusement. Humans were so silly about nudity.
No, you two are okay. No bodies in that pool?"
asked Cop One, smiling broadly.
"Only ours," Dahlia said, trying to purr. She did a credible job.
"Probably a prank call," said Cop One. "Sorry we're interrupting your evening. We would have been here 20 minutes ago if there hadn't been a wreck on our exit ramp."
That was interesting, but they had to stay in character.
"You're not disturbing us at all,"
Katamori said, bending his head to kiss Dahlia's neck.
"Let's look through the bushes," said Cop Two, scandalized,
and the two policemen dutifully searched the paths and parted the bushes, trying not to watch the activity in the waters of the fountain while checking any place a body could be concealed. Except for the one place it was. But they made a slow job of it, because they kept looking back to watch Dahlia and Katamori, whose cavorting progressed from warm to simmer to boil.
"Oh my God," said Cop One. "They're actually..." "Did you know how fast they could move?" muttered Cop Two. "Her boobs are shaking like maracas."
By the time the two marched back to the mansion's French doors, the two vampires were perched on the edge of the fountain, Katamori's legs hanging over the maintenance door, while Dahlia sat in his lap. They both looked pleased, and were whispering to each other in a lover-like way. Dahlia was saying, "I'm much refreshed. What a good idea, Katamori."
"I enjoyed that. I hope we can do it again. Even out here. Perhaps without an audience next time. How many police were lined up inside, watching?"
"At least 5. Plus the 2 out here."
"Did you see what I found in the hiding place?"
"Yes, I saw. Joaquin will be so pleased with us. Surely the humans will leave soon. I think we did an excellent job of distracting them. Thank you."
"Oh, it was my pleasure,"
Dahlia said sincerely. In half an hour, Joaquin himself came into the garden to tell them that the police had left. He was only slightly startled to find them still naked.
I'm glad you've enjoyed each other's company, he said. Did you have any problems concealing the body?
Let me show you what we found under the fountain when we opened it, Dahlia said, and reopened the panel to pull a bundle of clothing out. It was not her clothing, or Katamori's. She shook out the garments and held them up for Joaquin's viewing. He was silent for a long moment.
Well, he said, that's settled then. Bring them in when you've readied yourself. Later tonight, I'll send Troy and Hazel out here to dispose of the body for good. I regret this whole incident.
The new sheriff seemed sincere to Dahlia. He turned and went into the mansion. The two pulled on their own garments, though Dahlia hated resuming her stained dress. It had been a gamble leaving the clothes in a heap by the fountain, but it had been the right touch. Katamori and Dahlia checked each other to make sure they were in order. She tucked his shirt in a little more neatly, and he buckled her very high heels for her. They followed Joaquin back in through the brightly lit French doors. The crowd had thinned.
Where are the demons? Dahlia asked Taffy, who was sitting beside Don on a love seat.
They left when the police did, Taffy said, running her fingers through her huge mane of hair. They were smart to go while the going was good.
There's no harm in that, Dahlia told her friend. Diantha was the only one involved, and we know she didn't do it.
Malponius looked sorry to be leaving without seeing you again, Taffy said slyly. He did a little looking out the windows when the police seemed so interested in the garden. I think it sparked a few memories he enjoyed very much.
You've had the demon?
Katamori was intrigued.
Yes, Dahlia said.
The heat and texture of his skin made the experience very interesting.
Nothing compared to you, of course.
Dahlia could be polite when it mattered. Joaquin and his bodyguards were waiting for Dahlia and Katamori to present their findings. All the Rhodes vampires gathered around when they entered. Joaquin, who had resumed his seat in his massive chair, waited impassively for their report. Cedric was still drinking red stuff and seemed even more unhappy, and Glenda, now completely healed, glowered at Dahlia. But they joined the throng with the rest. Even Don and his enforcer rose to join the crowd when Taffy did.
That was an excellent strategy to distract the police, Joaquin said. Now, tell us what you've discovered.
We found a bundle of bloody clothes hidden in the base of the fountain, Dahlia said, and a ripple ran through the crowd. If we hadn't had to hide the body, if no one had called the police, we might never have found them. Since Arthur Althorpe's murderer was the one who called the police, hoping to get the nest in trouble, you might say he cut his own throat. Joaquin held up the bloody bundle. The smell was really strong now, and the wearer's upper lips pulled up in a snarl of distaste. Even wearers liked their blood fresh. Joaquin, with a certain amount of drama, shook out the garments, one by one.
Cedric, I believe these are yours, he said.
That's not true,
Cedric said calmly. He swept a hand down his chest.
Someone is trying to incriminate me. This is what I have been wearing all evening.
Not so, retorted Dahlia. The flowers on your vest were golden at the beginning of the evening. After the death of the human, the flowers were blue. She was almost sad to have to say the words, but out of spite, Cedric had almost condemned the whole nest to hours in the police station, days of bad press, and the end of the regime of Joaquin before it had even really begun.
The clothes you have on now are your clothes you wear when you garden, the clothes you leave hanging on a peg outside, including the boots.
Everyone looked down at Cedric's scruffy boots. They were certainly not footwear anyone would choose to wear to a reception, not even Cedric. For a second, fear flashed in Cedric's blue eyes. Only for a second. Then he charged at Dahlia, a wild shriek coming from his lips. She'd been expecting it for all of a couple of seconds.
She stepped to the left quicker than the eye could track her, seized Cedric's right arm as he went past her, twisted it upward at a terrible angle, and when Cedric screamed, she gripped his head and twisted. Cedric's head came off. There was silence for a moment.
"I'm so sorry," she said to Joaquin. "I didn't intend his decapitation. The mess..."
"He'll flake away, and we'll get out the vacuum cleaner,"
Joaquin said, with a good approximation of calm. Before his elevation to the sheriff's position, Joaquin had been in body disposal, Dahlia recalled.
"If the stain won't clean out of the rug, we'll buy another."
That was something Cedric would never have said, and Dahlia brightened.
"Thank you, Sheriff.
He almost surprised me," she said, and she could barely believe the words were coming from her lips. Perhaps she would miss Cedric more than she had realized.
"When the humans charge the police in order to be shot, they call it suicide by cop."
Katamori bowed to his new friend.
He said gallantly, "We will call it death by Dahlia."